their problems, things they're rejoicing in, and some of their personal testimonies. Why? So that knowing them better, we might love them better. We might be drawn somewhat closer to them in these bonds of Christian love. But it goes beyond that. It's so that we might be more specific in our love for our brethren overseas as we are completely for our brethren here in this country. Knowing the vow of the Lord, we often repeat these words. Daily while I remember its throne of heavenly grace, the general interest of the harvest work, and particularly the share which I myself am privileged to enjoy in that work, and the dear co-laborers everywhere. And so as we make this presentation and introduction to our brethren in Europe, it is with the suggestion that we each seek to remember daily, specifically, one individual or another in prayer, or remember the interest, specifically, of one country with its problems and its projects and its hopes and rejoicings in the same group and together. So with this in mind, if we can have the lights dim, we will begin. One of the most beautiful sisters we met was a sister first of Mabuse, France. She's a German-speaking sister with many years in the School of Christ. In her home, she has a large illustration of the tabernacle. One of the features that she pointed out to us in discussion was the meaning of the word built that is mentioned in conjunction with the hole around the cross. Remember, it says it's posts of wood, set of sockets of brass, their hooks silver, and their posts of silver. But in the German Bible, this word is translated with the word that means a connecting rod. And this is borne out by a strong concordance, where it is derived from root, meaning to join. So these were then a sort of silver curtain rod, connecting one post with the other, serving both to hold the posts closer together and stabilize them, and at the same time to help hold up the curtain of Christ. These were made out of silver. And silver represents truth. And so it is true that it is a tie that binds the brethren of Christ together, whether here or in Europe. This is the tie we want to emphasize in this presentation. And now we'll begin at this point on here. We'll begin on the west.
With the brethren in Ireland, the furthest west of the countries of Europe. It's hard to imagine a more beautiful and serene countryside than that of Ireland. The land itself, with its verdant valleys and its tranquil lakes, seems to just shout for peace. And yet today, Ireland is one of the most rightful countries of the world. The Catholic Protestant conflict, really it's more political than religious, makes the area an armed garrison, pockmarked with the burnt-out shells of bombed buildings and the graves of murdered men. The heart of the turmoil is both in Belfast and it's in Londonderry. And it is here in Derry that we meet one of the four ecclesias in all of Ireland. There are five brethren in the Londonderry class, Brother Tom and Sister Maud Lang, Sister Alice Johnson, Sister Maggie Thompson, bending over signing the banner, Sister Henry, based no hold of their weekly meetings. But with the neighbor of the Langs recently machine gunned to death, with their local butcher shop bombed because the proprietor sold meat to the British soldiers, it's not easy to maintain Christian values and the spirit of love even toward our enemies. We were impressed with how well they were doing this. Some years back, Brother Norman Woodworth was scheduled to give the public talk in Londonderry. He secured the local orangeman's call. When the ad in the paper or the tracts here, the clergy of the town got up in arms. They were not able to persuade the Orangemen to cancel the hall, so they took out a full-page ad in the paper, attacking the meeting of Brother Woodward as dangerous. On the Sunday of the meeting, they warned the congregation to just be attending. And as a result, 200 showed up. 100 came into the truth and consecrated. Much of liturgy today is divided into a Catholic section and a Protestant section. Most of the brethren, including Tom and Walt and I, live here in the Catholic area. They find that their neighbors are very nice. They find that they are in no personal danger because the violence is aimed directly at those who collaborate with the British. But they see it daily. And they are submitted to Christie before entering the heart of the city. Sister Thompson, who lived across the river, there in the Protestant area, can seldom make meetings because of the danger of crossing the borderline. Yes, we need to pray for the peace of Derry and the whole world. Not far north of London, Derry is Port Rush and the Port in the Glass Hotel. Now, this is where the Irish General Convention is held each May or June. It's right on the banks of the Irish Sea, at the very northernmost tip of Ireland. Some 35 to 45 brethren, many from the British Isles, with usually some American visitors, attend. As they go to lunch every day, they pass these scripture billboards. The Port of Glass Hotel, where the convention is held, is owned by Sister Fanny Simpson, whom many of you know. We visited her in the hospital in Coleraine, where she is quite ill with a stomach condition. At that time, it was not yet diagnosed. Her spirit is good and cheerful, but physically she is quite low. She is planning on selling her hotel, so this year may be the last convention of Port Rush. South of Derry, we come to County Fermanagh in the lake region of Ulster, and here we might meet the largest class in Ireland, 8, including 2 children. The meetings are held here in the home of the Sisters Bartlett. For years, these 3 sisters, you see 2 of them, Sister Madge in the pink sweater, and next to her the yellow and blue Sister Jenny, along with their other sister, Lily. For years, these 3 sisters ran their own 50-acre farm until severe arthritis forced them to retire to this cottage. All 3 of them have had to get artificial joints, Sister Lily being the most recent to go through this operation. The only other member of the class you met is Sister Mary on the left. Most of the legendary class also was here. These brethren, as all of the Irish brethren, were what were called former Cuneyites. Now the Cuneyites were a branch of the Great Church who believed that salvation was dependent about going about 2 by 2 with no purse or script. But then the brother Hume of the Cuneyites heard of Pastor Russell's teachings, and he brought about 25 of them out into the light of present truth. These are our current brethren in Ireland. While some of them are somewhat reserved, fellowship with the Bartley home was just as warm as the fire in your heart. Sister Madge, the right, is a postmistress in a small community nearby. That evening, in taking a walk to the town of Pitch, where a hotel is located, we met a gentleman along the street. We began talking to him. And we happened to mention to him that we knew the postmistress of the neighboring community. And he responded, "Oh, you mean Madge Bartlett? She is one of the finest women in God's green earth." He then described the love of the whole family, and the thoughts of the hymn became yet more meaningful. "They will know you were Christians by your love." Leaving Northern Ireland, we come to the one area in the southern part of Ireland where there are brethren, Dublin and Sister Kitty Wells. Some of you know her from her visit to the United States some years back. There is a class of 6 in Dublin, but the class is somewhat of a trial, Sister Kitty, because of the broad range of viewpoints, particularly regarding the subject of Israel. 2 in the class feel that Israel is everything, and they are involved with bonds for Israel and other Zionist activities. But another brother, recently come out from the Jehovah's Witnesses, does not yet see that Israel has any place in God's plan. So as a result, Sister Kitty finds the necessity of continually standing for the truth on the subject quite wearing spiritually. The Dublin class is considering taking on the sponsorship of the Irish Convention. And last year they did hold a convention with some 50 brethren in attendance. However, there is some concern over this by the brethren in Ireland, because many of the class in Dublin are connected with the Maranatha movement,
which did not believe that the Lord had returned for a second advent. Well, now let us leave Ireland, and we'll go across the Irish Sea to the country of England, and Wales, Scotland. In Great Britain, there are three groups of brethren, or somewhat closely related. The largest is the Maranatha movement, with its belief in the future presence. They are a very active group of perhaps 250 to 300. They're very zealous in public witness. They're very active with the young people. Brother Clutcham, if you're here, is one of the elders in this group. A second group is more closely aligned to the teaching of Brother Russell, seeing matters very similarly to our class in Chicago, although with a more future prophetic plan. And Sister Mercy Watts, an isolated sister in Oxford, and the Brethren Miller book will represent this viewpoint. The difficulty with many of these things, however, is that the lack of response to public witness has convinced many of them that the time for such witness work is all in the past. There are outstanding exceptions to this rule. Sister Gertrude Cornell on the left, and Brother and Sister Adal, who formed the Dawn Committee for England, are very active in the public witness activities. They are planning to have an ad in the English edition of Reader's Digest in the near future. Brother Adal and Brother Robinson are the only two pilgrims in England, and they each visit all the classes and all the isolated twice a year. Brother Adal in winter since he travels by train, and Brother Robinson in the summer by autumn. Alder's book holds three conventions a year, and the class in West Wickham holds one in October. The Kensington Convention is about 50 to 60. In England, Bible study is the norm. The leading is very loose. It's subject to the thinkings of the brethren, rather than being directed by the leader. Personally, I enjoy it. One point that I mentioned from one of the Bible studies was here in this class at West Wickham. It was a study on Hebrews 11. And Hebrews 11, verse 21, it mentions that one of the acts of faith of Jacob was that he worshipped leaning on the top of the staff. And the question was, what is the faith in leaning on the top of the staff? It was brought out in the study that the act of faith was the decision to bless Joseph rather than Reuben, who was the firstborn. And that this decision was based on who had God blessed. And God had blessed Joseph in raising him to the number two spot in Pharaoh's kingdom. The staff of the verse refers not to Jacob's, but to Joseph's staff, and was representative of his position in life. And so it was Jacob looking at whom God had blessed as the indicator as to whom he should bless, worshiping and basing his faith on the height of Joseph's staff in life. The footnote in the emphatic dialogue bears out this explanation very well. Now let's meet a few individual brothers from England. Sister Ivy Bims on the right, with her daughters Pauline and Debbie. Sister Ivy, with her husband Brother Fred, first heard the truth from Frank Ernest in Dundee, Scotland. They were very active in the Church of England. And immediately they began to study the volumes, and they went to the newspaper and they placed an advertisement on their own, advising people to listen to Frank and Ernest. Sometime later, they wrote to the Dawn and they got the address of the Dundee priest. When they first went, the brethren were thrilled to heaven. And the brethren inquired of them if they were the ones who had placed the staff in the paper. Yes, we are. Well, how did you do it? We've been trying for years to place an ad. And the Roman Catholic manager of the paper will not accept their ad. Well, the answer was simple. Brother Vince operates a major department store, and the paper would be dependent on you for advertising. As years went on, the Vince family began going to conventions in England. And they loved the fellowship, and they desired to move there for the greater fellowship than a little class of five than me. When they got home, they always began reasoning. If two of us leave, that will be three. And that's too much to ask the brother here. So they would give up their hopes to move to England, and they would stay in that day. And the class was 4 and 3. And yet their aims were still the same. They'd always want to move to England, but always they didn't feel they should because they didn't want to abandon the few that were left in Dundee. And finally, when the class got down to 3, they were coming back to the convention in England,
and they decided to no longer think about the move. Immediately, they received a job offer from him, back where the brethren were. But still, they wouldn't accept it without discussing it with the one brother left in Dundee. He encouraged them to move. He said, "I'm not going to be living too much longer. And for your spiritual health and those of your children, you should move." And so they did. 3 months later, he died. And he would have been alone in Dundee. Recently, Brother Ben's store was sold by the owners, and once again, he was out of work. With the job had gone the free use of the house. This also was lost. England was faced with unemployment problems and with a housing shortage. But they left matters in the Lord's hands. Within a week, he was offered a far better job with another firm. And someone called him up on the phone, someone they hadn't talked to for years, and said, "A friend of ours is selling their house, what are you interested?" And it was a larger home, and Sister Ivy put it, "Now we can entertain more brethren." The Lord again provided for his needs. Down beyond Stonehenge is a small town in Gilgal. And here there is a house that is called Cass, which is occupied by a sister, Phyllis Grace, affirmed by the students found in the faith. Her husband had become the youngest professor in Oxford history, teaching music composition at age 21. But later that same year, he heard of a religious lecture being given in Southampton by Charles Gaze Russell of America. He became so convinced of the truth that he gave up his academic career. He became a full-time cohort, and he and Sister Tracy continued in that lifestyle for 40 years, supporting themselves by Brother Tracy giving organ concerts. Brother Tracy passed away in 1970. The library of the Tracy's is filled with those books in every book of the Bible. And one special treasure that she has passed on to us here in Chicago is her work of 8 years, the updating of the Berean Comics for the years of 1908 to 1916, a volume of 770 typewritten pages. Although she is virtually alone, only having heart-to-heart fellowship with one other brother in yoga, she holds a 5-day study gathering once a year with an attendance of about 20 to 25. In 1970, when her husband died, she had to rent out the bottom flat of her house for income purposes. But she insisted that the tenants vacate that flat 1 week a year so she could have house rent for her annual study gatherings. In London, we meet Brother Nico Hudson. He's well known throughout the world for his work in publishing and editing the Bible Study Monthly. The current sorrow for him has been the passing away of his wife early this year. Here we see him with Brother Jim Bignell of West Wickham. Brother Hudson is currently heading the project of starting the Bible Student Old People's Home in England. They are looking at a mansion near Yeovil with 17 bedrooms. Although the asking price is just over $100,000, they are offering what they have, $75,000, and decided to take the acceptance or the non-acceptance of that offer at the Lord's will. We can't really think of without reference to the Evans family, whom we know in this country by their American representative, Sister Margaret Prochisky in Detroit. Margaret's mother on the left and her grandmother, now 95 years of age, are doing well spiritually in the Alderbrook class, as is her sister Gwen. She has another sister, Joan, who is married to Brother Alexander Tarsus of Trent, England, and they, along with her son Nicholas, are very active and a delight to fellowship with spiritually. Brother Alex and Sister Joan have just recently returned from a visit last year with the Reverend and priest, and they maintain contact with the Truth Movement in that country. It is also at their home where Sister Amy Pamplin is able to get to the meetings, and she is one who many of the brethren here know very well. Sister Amy is still rejoicing very strongly in the truth. Physically, she is aging somewhat as a bronchial condition, but appears to be in a fairly good condition physically. One last view in England, and in reality, this was our first view in our trip, and that's Brother Spain on the Great Exam. Delightful brother of 73, who shared with us his thoughts on the sacrifice of praise, and how that the worship that Israel had in the tabernacle that they offered has been replaced with our privilege of offering the calves of our lips, the bullocks of our lips.
a delightful thought, and filled with spiritual responsibility and keeping and watching our tongues, that our tongue can be used ever, only, all for thee. Now let's cross the English Channel to France, and one of the most active truth movements in Europe. In France, there are three groups of brethren. One speaking predominantly French, publishing the journal Aurora Millenniale. One speaking predominantly German, with its magazine Aurora. And one speaking predominantly Polish, with two magazines, Journal of Science and Blossom. Most of the Polish-speaking brothers are clustered in the northern part of the country, in the coal mining region of Lille. Their conventions are held about four or five times a year, with attendance ranging as high as 250 to 300. During the First World War, many of the youth of France were killed in large numbers, and there was no one to work the coal mines. And at that same time, there was an unemployment problem in Poland, so many of the Polish youth migrated to northern France. In the 1920s, Brothers Krasnodzuma of Detroit would make trips to the brethren of Poland and stop en route in northern France. And the brethren there described the work of Brother Krasn this way, and I quote, "You know, in Polish, the word for a mole is crack. Brother Krasn would come to France, and he would attend the Catholic Church, and then afterward, like a mole, he would work underground and push up the dirt." And this is how the Polish movement began in France. There are many young people now in this area. They are the grandchildren of the original settlers. Much work is done for the young people. Special conventions. Much attention to singing. And Brother Gina Rosbarski of the Paris area is especially involved with this part of the activity. I counted the young people as they came off the stage after singing for the convention. As they came off the stage for singing for the convention, there were exactly 50 of them. The baptism of thought was by Brother Felix Polarski, and there were two who were immersed. Brother Jenny Delmata, he's related to the Gorilla family here in Chicago. He plans to visit here this fall. And Sister Ann Goh on the right, Wolster Court, 17 years old, and very serious about her consecration. In fact, the entire Goh family is an outstanding example, Hebrews 13:2. "Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for some have entertained angels thereby unawares." You know, with the communication difficulties, when all you speak is English, and all they speak is Polish or French, there is a natural reluctance on their part to entertain brethren from America who do not speak either Polish or French. But not so with the Goh family. They not only entertain with tremendous generosity and great hospitality, but they manage to communicate as well. In mentioning to them our sincere thanks for all of their hospitality, we mentioned how sad we were that we had nothing to give in return. And Brother Goh responded, "On the contrary, you have given us the knowledge of our brethren in America and other lands, and this has greatly enriched our prayer life." In complimenting Sister Goh on an exceptional lovely piece of crystal in their home here, her reply was, "Yes, it is very pretty. It was a gift. But our real treasures are those that we have in heaven." While we were there, the youngest daughter, down at the bottom center, happened to actually have 11 chickens out of the chicken coop. And the patient with which he looked up was just another of the lessons in Christian attitude that we learned from this lovely family. They're also very active in witnessing on a personal basis. Brother Goh is the teaches ceramics. He puts on ceramics displays. And at one of the ceramics workshops he had, a man came in quite interested in purchasing ceramics. And he invited him to the house to see more of the ceramics and to hear about the truth. He's seated at the end of the table, Brother Leon, now consecrated and a member of the Ocean Court of Ecclesiastes. We can't talk about this area of France without talking about Brother Jesse and the Pius. Brother here have gotten to know them somewhat through their visit last year, 2 years ago. They continue to hold high the banner of truth. And they are particularly involved with the one area of difficulty among the brethren in this area, and that is public witness.
Many of the French brethren react as do the brethren in England to the lack of response. They take it as indication to cease activity in public effort. In quite marked contrast with the discourse of Bishop Fayon at the convention, he spoke on the flood in type and anti-type. And the point he was pressing was that Noah was a preacher of righteousness for 120 years without one convert, and yet he continued to be a preacher of righteousness. Brother Papaya's brother Simone publishes a periodical called The Far Is Known, The Lighthouse of Zion. And this is distributed to over 3,000 clergymen and rabbis throughout France, as well as to political leaders all over the world. In fact, Simone carried on correspondence with Moshe Dayan and Willy Brandt determining that prophecy. Brother Antoine Papaya from the center will be making another trip to America this year, spending the month of September with the brethren in America and Canada. You might just mention on the right, Brother Francois Wozniak, whom some of you know, is quite sick at the present time with black lung disease from the mind where he works. The fifth conclusion that defines the Polish movement in France worked together in many projects, especially the Pilgrim Service and the publication of the two magazines. Once a year, there was a nationwide elders meeting to discuss these topics. The editorial boards for both the Polish and the French magazines are selected at this meeting by class representatives giving the vote in the local ecclesia for the slate of nominees proposed for the editorial committees. While most of the classes are in the Lille area, but there is a class in South France, one in the Paris area, two near Luxembourg in Metz, one in Polish and one in French, and three in Eastern France in Malouse, as well as one in Belgium. There's been a division recently in the Malouse area that has involved the doctrines of the Second Presence. But the experiences of many of the brethren there, such as the Kabbalistic and group family pictured here, is that the vast majority do believe in the Lord's presence. The situation with the brethren from this area is very similar to that of northern France, where we have Brother Sister Kabbalistic. And the only thing different here is the mines. In northern France, they work in the coal mines. In southern France, they work in the salt mines. As Brother Kowalski put it, ours is not a problem of black lung disease, such as currently affects Brother Kowalski, but of the extreme heat of the salt mines. It is in this area of France that we find the German-French movement publishing the Dawn in French, Aurora. This work is largely carried on by the sister in the middle, Sister Margaret Schoenberg. Almost 70 years of age, she translates all the articles, sees to the printing, handles all the responses from the public, and recently in the French Reader's Digest, they had an advertisement with over 700 responses. Just, we have come to admire ourselves over the past year, the consecration ideals of this country that have expressed themselves in the concept of full-time service. Young brethren putting in 8 hours a day in truth-related activities, rather than using this time in more temporally profitable activities. But in France, we saw this concept magnified. Brethren fully involved in the Lord's work from the moment they rose until they dropped really back in their bed that evening. Beautiful example. Just a few miles from Malouse, we come to the heart of the German Truth and Activity. Excuse me. The heart of the German Truth Activities in Freiburg on the edge of the Black Forest. In Brother Russell's day, much of the German work was handled by Brother Otto Keegans. After his death, this work was picked up by his daughter and son-in-law, Brother and Sister Krecker. The work was shifted from Berlin to Freiburg shortly after the building of the Berlin Wall. There, Brother Fisher in the middle, along with the brother Fisher here, Sister Fisher on the left, Sister Christy Krecker, and Brother Willie Paul carried on the work. The past year and a half has seen many changes among the brethren in Freiburg. But again, the maxim, the Lord will provide, true. And much of the story we want to relate will have to do with the Sister Marguerite Blair, pictured here in the center, with Sister Fisher and Sister Schoenberg. First, let me deviate from the German work to give you a little background on Sister Blair. She was born and raised as a Lutheran in Yugoslavia, not in this area. When the Nazi troops overran Yugoslavia, her husband was drafted to Hitler's army, and she was forced to flee to Russia, leaving her children behind with her parents. In Russia, she had to work in coal mines in the Ural Mountains for 6 years, bringing her faith in God to a very low level. On one occasion, she was lost in the mindset. And there she called her mother's voice, saying, "When in deepest despair, pray and sing." So she prayed, and she sang hymns as she walked along, and eventually she found her way out, and her faith began to grow stronger and stronger. After the war, when she was released, she searched for her husband, her parents, and her children, but they were not to be found. She began to work as a nurse. She eventually made her way in that profession here at the primary. Now, let's go back to the events among the German brethren during the last few years. About 4 years ago, Brother Fisher took the ill and died. In looking for a nurse for him during his last days, a Sister Lear was hired, and both the Fishers and Sister Crichton witnessed to her. She had some interest, but not a lot. Then last year, Brother Louis Paul passed away. Sister Christa Crichton had an operation to remove cataracts in her eyes. While she was home recuperating from that operation, again Sister Lear was called in as a nurse. And again, the brethren witnessed to her, and this time there was great interest on her part. Then after Sister Crichton was well from the eye operation, and doing all the translation work for the German dawn, God has on her once again. She had a sudden heart attack and passed away. This left Sister Fisher with all the work of translating, printing, handling responses, in addition to the work of settling Sister Crichton's estate, and of determining what work was to be done. While very diligent, Sister Fisher found that she just did not have the organizational skills to respect her, and that that work was more than she could do. And it was right at that juncture that Sister Lear, who had attended the funeral for Sister Crichton, volunteered to come in and help. And being an extremely efficient and organized person, she filled the void left by Sister Crichton. At the memorial this year, she participated in the emblems. She plans the day of birth at the German General Convention in Bad Hersfeld this month, the same meeting as our convention in Chicago. Although deeply consecrated, Sister Lear has not yet dropped her membership in the Lutheran Church, although she has never believed in hell or Trinity, or maybe other areas of the system. In July, however, two more brethren will be moving to Freiburg to help out in the work, and they hope to start in Ecclesia, and they feel that the class being going will be the thing needed to make the final break with Sister Lear. Two others, former Jehovah's Witnesses, are also expressing an interest in Friday. Another blessing for the brethren in this area has been their first month in the German edition of Reader's Digest, with a response of over 950. Since Sister Crichton's death, the translation work has become too much for Sister Fisher, and so translation teams have been formed throughout Germany to help in this work. In Berlin, Sister Ruth Hauser on the right does some of the translation. You may remember her from her visit last year. Here she is with her parents, Brother Gunther and Sister Katie Hauser. Her brother Reinhold also does some of the translation with the help of his wife Marilyn, the former Marilyn Koski of Lubavitch. They now have a baby, Jennifer, who will be accompanying them this year when they come to America to visit. In Berlin, there are various other brethren. Sister Moss on the far right, Sister Ludwig next to her, and a friend of theirs from Munich on the left. One active brother we were not able to contact in Berlin is Brother Harry Venus. He's quite new to the church, but he's very anxious to collect the writings of Pastor Russell in German or in English, which he would then translate into German for the brethren. But perhaps the major translator of the German dawn is Sister Eva Dortmund of Hanover. She meets with these brethren in that city. Brother Sister Ludwig, Brother Ludwig is on the right. Sister Ludwig is the second from the right. Speaking both English, both German and Polish. The standard of present truth is held very high here in this small class of Hanover. And there is much concern in Hanover over the prophetic content of the translated articles from the American dawn, particularly the controversial article of the August 76 issue, which appeared in the February 77 German dawn. The concern of the brethren in Hanover over this article was also echoed by the small group here in Dortmund, Germany. Here we have only the Hans-Sears family on the right with their daughter, Uschi, and Brother Lutz Brutmann. Brother Brutmann is a graphic arts designer by trade. He is also an excellent photographer and has just returned from his third trip to Israel. His wives are among the most beautiful we have seen in the Holy Land. While in Israel, he has made contact with a Christian Jew, Dr. Shlomo Herzig, who has expressed much interest in the truth. But the concern for the prophetic trend in Saga Sansa found its most able expression in the brethren event at Kufstein, Austria, particularly Brother and Sister Peter Capelon of Brightwood, Germany, near Munich. Here we see the Capelon with Brother and Sister Nicasian of Kufstein. The Nicasians are two brothers of Italian descent who are very well grounded in the truth. By trade, Brother Capelon is a Capelon photographer. He has a decent command of the English language and somewhat hampered communication by stuttering problems. Very well versed in the present truth and a member of the German Dawn, he is very intent on maintaining the historical interpretation of the prophecy, while guarding zealously against these differences causing schisms or division amongst the German brethren. It's a difficult task. But we could not help but feel that his spirit and zeal could be affected if the Lord so wills. Moving on to the largest class in West Germany, we come to the small town of Wolf on the Tegernitz River, just north of Nuremberg. There are 10 consecrated and 2 interested who attend the meetings. Brother Fritz Bierner, standing here, and Brother Willie Mueller are actively involved in the work of the private founder. Brother Mueller is a very spry E4. Excellent Bible student. And Sister Mueller, on the left of the sisters, was a former cult worker from Brother Russell Day. A spiritual lesson from this class was a discussion in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, in a scripture we had not noted before to distinguish attitudes between the little flock and the great company. 1 Corinthians 9, 17 and 18. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if, against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed to me, what then is my reward? As one crosses from the brightly colored houses and the oriental roofs of West Germany, through the Iron Curtain, into the Eastern, the suddenness of the change is dramatic. The streets are dead. The houses are grand and brown. Political slogans are everywhere. For the brethren of East Germany, the change is even more stark. Common freedoms of movement are not to be found. There is only limited freedom of meetings. But from all reports, the spiritual health of the brethren in East Germany is quite strong. Numerically, there are perhaps more brethren in East Germany than in West Germany. Maybe 250 or 300 to about 150 in the West. Strong leadership has apparently preserved the doctrines of truth. And within their legal limitations, the brethren there seem to have a good zeal for its proclamation. In recap of the areas covered thus far, Tagesanbruch, the German Dawn, has a circulation of about 600. The French Dawn has a circulation of about 150. And the Journal of Zion, published in North France, has a circulation of about 550. Now, before going east to Poland, we want to detour to the north to Scandinavia, home of Hamlet, but also the home of Sister Edith Mossberg. She lives in Concord. She is the heart and the feet of the Danish movement. Denmark, as you can see in the map, is divided into 3 islands. Seeland, the island of Copenhagen. Jutland, jutting north from the Germany. And a little island of Cuban in between. There are 6 sisters on Seeland. Only 3 live close enough together to have regular meetings. Sister Hasselgaard visits the other 3 4 times a year. Likewise, Sister Edith makes 4 trips a year to visit the 6 sisters who live on Jutland. And they're each isolated there from each other. The one sister on Cunin, over 80 years of age, holds the annual Danish convention at her home. The Navy General Convention has a maximum attendance of 11. All Christians. A brother from Germany usually arranges to attend the convention, and he gives a talk in German, which most of the Navy brothers understand. Sister Edith and Sister Maria from Tuckman also attend the Anglo-German Convention in Bad Hersfeld, about 125 days. Because there are no brethren in Denmark, the meetings of the Copenhagen class were either circles for the reading of the lines or listening to pigs. You know, it's hard to visualize such isolation for us to be so fortunate. But it was well accepted by Sister Hospitaller's reactions, and we would mention a brother or sister she knew. She would always be a quick wiping to the face, a half mile, and eager look bending forward and saying, "Oh, give them my very special love." This is the view of her backyard, across the channel to the country of Sweden. Sweden is even more sparse when it comes to kindred minds. Here we see the holiday development in Lanta near Gothenburg, where Brother Emil Anderson lives. Brother Anderson is 92 years old. He received the truth in a public talk given by Pastor Russell in 1910, right near his father. He moved back to Sweden in 1914, but because of the war, he's very active with Brother Ludetow, who handled the Swedish truth work after the death of Brother August Lundborg. He was personally acquainted with the Edgar brothers. Largely because of his German studies and his personal lack of acquaintance with other brothers in the truth, he has regrettably come to the conclusion that the door was shut in 1954 and that the last member will go beyond the veil in 1980. There's also a small group of brethren in Stockholm, for Brother Anders Carlin is elder. Brother Carlin's father, too, made a trip to the pyramid of Brother Edgar in the 1916-1915 area. However, this group is almost fully involved with the study of the pyramid to the exclusion of other points. Another development which makes Sweden of interest to the Bible studies world is the dissatisfaction that is currently going on among the members of the Jehovah's Witnesses. And much of this is centered around the research of two men in Sweden. Here we have Dietrich Schroeder of Kathy, who we visited 3 years ago. And then there's Bud Person of Persborn, who we saw this year. Although he is still a witness, Rod is vitally interested in the teachings of Pastor Russell. Although much of the interest is historical, there is a deep scriptural interest as well. Let's put it in these words. I must know the truth. We were able to understand through our fellowship with him much better why the dissatisfied witnesses are so interested in the history of the movement. Because to them, the transfer of the power from Brother Russell to Rutherford was very important. If it was legal, in their minds, it gives much support to the concept of the channel and much more strength to the idea of a second death as a very real thing. But if it can be proved to be fraudulent, then it gives to them much more reason to think that Brother Russell as an individual was a wise and faithful servant, and therefore a great incentive to study his works. Currently, the main doctrinal point of discussion of this group is the second presence of Christ. And while not able to yet accept our point of the secret presence, Rudd admitted with great honesty where our points were strong, and he expressed a strong desire to accept that truth, given the truth to be true. Before leaving Scandinavia, we should mention briefly the country of Finland. While we did not stop there, we understand that there is an annual convention of Bible students in Corfu, which is right over in this part of Finland, with an annual attendance of about 45, one of whom reportedly speaks English. Maybe another should be able to meet that. There is also indication of at least one brother, formerly of Ethiopia, who is now living in the very edge of Lapland. But let us move on to the largest area of the overseas harvest field, and that's the largest field of all, Poland. Here, too, there are three separate movements. The Epiphany movement, connected with the Lane Pro Missionary movement, numbering perhaps 500 or 600. The Sikh movement, numbering about 250 to 300. And the General Holy Bible Student movement, with maybe as many as 5,000. The death of Brother Gunjala on the left, just over a year ago, was very difficult for the Brethren of Poland. But they worked very well. Sister Gugel on the left, a still operation house of prayer, of course. Brother Adam Janinski is an overall sergeant work. And Brother Julius Dominic in the center of problem is the general secretary. There are about 100 equations in full. One third of them in the proper city, maybe a 60-mile radius of problem. The proper class itself is the largest, with about 300 members. We were impressed with the comprehension of truth in all the speeches. We held many true discussions with the brethren in both Crawford and Warsaw. A topic covered included the role of the angels in the first world, the illustration of Sodom and Gomorrah as used in 2 Peter 2, the timing of the seven trumpets and their coordination of the seven last plagues, the ways and means for calculating the death for the resurrection of the sleeping saints. We particularly enjoyed discussing Brother Kaminsky of Crawford and the Brother Bachwash problem. So the mission is hard. In Poland, as in France, there are many young people reflecting the good habit of the Polish parents in rearing their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. As in Warsaw, so in Krakow, the meeting hall is owned by the brethren. It's been purchased, we understand, by the brethren from America. The offices prescribed in the Holy Bible in publication are here at the meeting place in Krakow. There are many jewels we could talk about in the Lord's promise to Poland. We will speak about this five personal testimony. Brother Julius Dominic, the center, his wife and family form a beautiful example of complete consecration. Their small apartment on the east edge of Krakow is a veritable Bible-centered hotel for any number, any hour, day or night. For ourselves, we arrived about 2 a.m. Not desiring to wake the house alone, we slept in our van until about 5 a.m. When Brother Dominic came out in the driving rain to scold us for not waking them, and to have Sister quickly ready sleeping space for 9 for a few more hours. Such intrusions, we were very firmly informed, were neither unusual nor were they unwelcome. As the French motto on their wall read, our guests always arrive too late and leave too early. In addition to this general activity in the truth work, Brother Dominic is also one of the 3 most active elders and working with the sizable group of young Polish men. He himself has several children, this is his daughter Lee. They have youth conventions that number sometimes as high as 600. Brother Dominic has 2 daughters at home now, Lydia is home here in Lola. And they are always busy with their mother in as Martha, making everything ready for a steady stream of visitors. We left Krakow Monday morning at 9 a.m. But Brother Dominic had already left Krakow at 5 a.m. with a young brother, driving him to Warsaw to appear in his court hearing, seeking a deferment from military service. Very typical sacrifice for a sacrificing priest. And this brings us to another delightful topic. On the right, Brother Jack Chinamowski, here you see with Brother Daniel Coletta, the son of Brother Coletta that was in America. John is 23 years old. He just completed his university. He's embarking on his first year as a professor in mechanical engineering. In Poland, the government makes no provisions for conscientious objection to military service. As long as John, here on the left, was in school, he was deferred. But now when he's out, there is no more deferment. However, the government does recognize religious involvement, especially with the elderly, as a cause of further deferment. And this is one of the reasons why in Poland, young brethren are generally made deacons shortly after their consecration to legitimize their claim to religious involvement. Brother John and his wife, Sister Donata, are seriously consecrated brethren. They're very active with the elderly. However, they still have to go through numerous court trials to prove their sincerity. If they should lose, he will not only face 3.5 years of prison, but also the loss of all professional status as a teacher for life. Sister Donata, on the left, traveled with us from Krakow to Warsaw. We became well acquainted with her. She was born in Siberia. Her family moved to northern Poland when she was 3. Both she and her husband are very studious, and they're currently taken with the chronological interpretation that has affected maybe 150 to 200 graduates of Poland. feeling that the door of the high calling will close at this October, that the sleeping angels will then be raised, that the last member of the church will be glorified in 1981, and the kingdom fully established by 1984. We disagreed and had a good discussion. What impressed us was the spirit of the discussion and the patience of the brethren before, who feel that if they are patient with these brethren, their views will fail themselves within 7 years, and they will return to the sounder basis of truth. Those in this group do maintain a very high regard for each of the pastor us. In fact, they feel that their concepts are the true extension of the rest of the people. Brother, I've come to appreciate very much that Brother Yakubowski on the left, he was his wife and daughter Renata, wife and daughter formerly, Shabbat. He gave an excellent talk on how to be a blessing. Here's Renata with her mother. Our translator of the was Brother Edward Pearson. Our next story deals with Brother Pine of Chesapeake, who became quite well known to brothers in America last year. We saw him do well rehearsed. Brother Pine has been immersed in years past, and as such has many dealings with the Jewish people. During the war, he was instrumental in helping to shelter a Jewish boy from the Nazi army. Before we finish the story, to be our last, we're going to be showing you pictures of the monument in Warsaw, raised in honor of the Jewish sacrifice, which is the best to deal with. Brother Pine's spring is beautiful. And Brother Pine returned to Poland last year. His plane stopped in Montreal. He knew that an acquaintance of his in Chesapeake during the war years lived there. He tried looking for his name in the phone book. There were three with that name. He chose one at random and dialed. He asked, "Do you speak Polish?" "Yes." Did you used to live in Chesapeake? "Yes." "Did you know there a man named Pine?" "Yes." "Well, I am he." And so immediately an animated conversation followed. And he asked about this young Jewish boy. And he said, "Oh yes, he is now living in New York. I have a phone number." Brother Pine proceeded to call the New York number. He found the boy had been trying to locate for the Pine for 15 years. He is quite rich in America. He wanted to escort Brother Pine around the country to the catalog. Since then, Brother Pine has received 3 letters from the nephew of the Jewish boy who lives on Laramie Avenue in Chicago. One final incident, the life of Sister Bronislava of Warsaw. A few years back, she went to attend the convention in Russia by train. As the train sped along, a hostess stopped by her seat and warned her, "Don't look out the window." She tried to comply. Several more times, she received the same warning. And she decided to try to comply. When she got off the train, she was questioned at length. "Now admit it, you did look out that window, didn't you?" That was the lack of freedom, so religion. Yes, there are brothers in so religion. Sister Donna can report over 1,000 in Siberia alone with a very small amount of freedom. Truth is scarce. Maybe one Bible every 10 brethren. Maybe one set of Bibles every 100 brethren. Others are ignorant regularly in Ukraine. But again, the freedom is greatly curtailed. Occasionally, the Polish pilgrims can visit them. An impromptu convention might be held in connection with a wedding or funeral when they're allowed 2 days of guests. They had to leave Poland with a feeling of great warmth. The great feeling of the brethren, one for another, with the words of the text so well engraved in our mind. "Both near and out of charity, adapted to their own devotion, be thou faithful unto death, and thou dearly to come upon us." Father Pharaoh's fellow brethren, Italy, Greece, Hungary, in India, in Africa, the brethren in Japan, in Australia, in New Zealand, in South America, and Alaska, but all have one thing in common. As opposed to the court, holding up the white finger twice righteousness, they are bound to each other with the silver cross of truth. Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts to the one. And we must remember, too, the brethren here in America. We give their support to those families. The brethren who saw us off at the airport. We welcome home to say that we came back in town. And the brethren gave us their fellowship upon the return. Pray for the prosperity of Zion. All in the Father. Thank you, Brother Carroll. And the church has. Thank you.
luck from the loss of our station, and announcement that the business meeting this afternoon at 1:30 p.m. will be held. There is no print to the agenda, but we will be discussing a series of two public talks in the fall. Also, don't forget that there are tracks available for the common public talk. Brother and Sister Joseph and I send their love to the brother and thank friends for their kindness and prayers on their behalf. Sister Demansky will be coming home from the hospital Monday or Tuesday and will be staying home with his son, the Ben Demansky. I'm sure that will be the time to meet with Mr. Kubrick. And Brother Edward Lorenz of the East Los Angeles Ecclesia has been in the hospital near his home since last Sunday with pericarditis that is fluid around the heart, but he is okay. He is doing well and expects to be home this week. However, he will be much better at some time. He and Sister Dora send their 15-month-old patient.